Welcome to Writers on the Beat, where crime writers meet crime fighters. I'm your host, Gavin Reese, and I'm proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. Every episode of this podcast will bring in a variety of experts to help all writers incorporate more authentic cops, crime, and criminals in their stories. For this episode, USA Today bestselling author Kate Holohan has joined me in the interrogation room to answer a few questions. Kirkus Reviews named Kate's first book, The Widower's Wife, among the best of 2016. She's additionally penned Lies She Told and Dark Turns, both to critical acclaim, and her latest release, which just came out yesterday, is entitled One Little Secret. Prior to becoming an author, Kate graduated from Princeton University in 2002 and was an award-winning journalist and television producer. Her articles have appeared in Business Week, the Boston Globe, the Record newspaper, and on numerous websites. Welcome to Writers on the Beat, Kate. Thanks for making time to join me today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Congratulations on this latest release. I'm currently reading One Little Secret, and it's an immediately intriguing novel. For readers who are new to you as an author, what would you like them to know about this book?
Well, sure. Well, the premise of the story is that we have three couples that are all neighbors in the same town. One couple is new to the town, and they decide a way to kind of deepen their superficial friendships with some of their neighbors and establish roots in the community is to rent a beach house and ask the neighbors to come in on it with them for a week. And so they do this. The kids are all at camp at the time. And they are drinking, secrets are released, and then in the morning, one of the people in the house ends up dead. And so it's kind of a locked room mystery in that you know somebody in the house did it. And Detective Gabby Watkins with the East Hampton Police Force is kind of charged with figuring out who did it.
Now, this book's already garnering tremendous praise from folks like Good Morning America and Crime Reads, Booklist and Library Journal and many more than that. With every new release being another little piece of your soul venturing out into the cold, dark world for criticism and review, that has to be really exciting.
It is exciting. It's true. I always feel a little conflicted about publication day because it's kind of when you send your baby out there to a beauty pageant and see if anyone thinks they're pretty, which is weird because, you know, it's your baby. But I've been very pleased so far with the reviews. It's always wonderful when you feel like people get the story and relate to some of the characters or, you know, hate the people that, you know, you kind of wanted to tip them off might not be the best kind of people. And so that's great.
Now, your writing seems to me to have a whole lot in common with like Harlan Coben, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like you cast ordinary people into these extraordinary circumstances to see how they fare and how they overcome. It also seems to me then that any one of your readers could end up being one of your characters.
I try to do that, yes. I think that what I try to do in psychological thrillers is take people that have a variety of flaws, not necessarily flaws that are so outrageous that you can't imagine anyone having them, and then, you know, throw them into very difficult situations, and kind of through the conflict that emerges there, that's where the drama comes from. And so, I hope that the average person doesn't have the worst of some of my characters' problems, but certainly with some of them, you know, there are characters there where the worst problem that they have is maybe kind of a feeling of a lost sense of self and insecurity, and I think that certainly people can relate to that.
Yes, certainly more than just the two of us for certain. A lot of writers and a lot of writing sages or writing advisors talk about, you know, encouraging new writers, new aspiring authors to write in series and to create this, you know, lovable character, you know, with serious flaws that readers will attach to and buy time and again. And if I'm wrong, correct me, but it seems like you write entirely in standalones and have new characters every time. How do you go about writing in such a way that your readers from your old books will equally enjoy and latch onto your new books?
Right. Well, I would love to kind of think of a serious character. I think the thing with psychological thrillers is, you know, after you've unraveled all the mystery, ideally your character should grow into a place or be left in a place where the same kind of drama couldn't happen to them. You know, it's not that you're taking a character that can really go and investigate yet another crime. In addition to that, though, I think that what keeps my readers going from book to book is kind of some of the same themes, and also, I guess, kind of the way I see the world and look through my character's eyes, and I think that they get attached to maybe that view.
On your subject of theme, I spoke with Karen Cleveland, I guess about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago now, and she's a former CIA analyst who's written a couple novels mostly centered on the idea of insider threat, which, you know, is when, you know, someone close to you in a position of trust betrays your trust, your confidence, or far worse. And it seems like a lot of your work touches on that similar theme. And I wonder what your inspiration is for your general overall writing.
Sure. Well, I think that a lot of crime is personal. Right. I mean, the people, it's unfortunate, but the people I think that we often hurt most are the people closest to us, because they're the ones that we have the most interactions with. Right. And yes. ones who our actions affect the most. So I try to keep it realistic that way. And as far as getting the ideas for it, you know, I look at problems that people have, maybe not every single person have, certainly not every single person, but, and then I try to kind of put people with those problems, maybe juxtapose them with people that have conflicting problems that, you know, when you kind of mesh the two of them together, it creates a much bigger problem. And so that's kind of how the stories play out.
Yeah, it also seems like a really good recipe for good reality TV.
I think we have... you'd like to think that the producers in a reality television show would have to step in at some point. In one of my books, they couldn't just let it play out.
Yeah, Big Brother gone very wrong. In incorporating the East Hampton Police Department into this book, without making, you know, this into a police procedural, how did you go about researching enough procedure to make that part realistic without necessarily becoming the focus of the book?
Well, I knew I wanted a female detective character because I was dealing with domestic violence and sexual assault, and so I wanted kind of a female detective's perspective, how she might view that case. And so, since I'm not a female detective, I found one. I called around New Jersey police departments looking for female detectives, and I was lucky that Bloomfield, New Jersey, has two female detectives on the force. And so I contacted the head of their detective department and their captain, and he put me in touch with Detective Shona Maldonado, who a female detective there, and she was very kind and kind of let me interview her and took me around the station and told me kind of some of the cases that tend to be thrown her way. Really not because, but in part because there are some kinds of cases where women might be more comfortable speaking to another woman, yes. a female detective, particularly if they've felt recently violated or intimidated by a man. They might not want to be sitting in a room with kind of a big, well-meaning yes. male detective who's asking them about, you know, very intimate questions yes. about their assault. And so she was able to kind of tell me why these cases got thrown her way a lot, and then also how she sees it, how she's able to balance her sympathy for people and at the same time kind of trying to unpack whether or not they're telling the truth because you're still doing an investigation. And she told me one story that really stuck with me that did not, of course, make it into the book, but just kind of gave me an insight into how she thinks. There was a case where a 12-year-old boy who was in foster care had been removed out of his home along with his brother and put in foster care. And he reported to the school nurse that the foster father was molesting him.
Oh no.
And so it got put, you know, so she ended up investigating it, and you know, she's talking to this boy and he's stoically explaining kind of the different incidents. And she said, you know, she left the interview room and she's, you know, she has her own children and she's in tears almost, you know, didn't cry in the interview room, but as soon as the door closes, because it's just so emotional, and says, well, hey, you know, we got to get these kids out. And the foster family had their own kids, as well as the foster kids in there. And so they, during the course of investigation, you know, the kids are removed from the home, all the kids. And it it turns out that the foster father was not actually in town. I guess he drove a truck. He was not in town during any of the incidents. And the young boy thought that, I guess, if he could get his foster parents ruled unfit, he'd be returned to his original family. And so I just thought, you know, and it really clearly stuck with her that she just felt how hard it was when there were really no winners. I mean, she had to do her job, right? And she's trying to be to protect these children. But at the same time, you know, the trauma that can be caused was by a lie. And the child, you know, also in some, not that lying is ever good, but you can sympathize with the desire to go back to his family at kind of at any cost. And so I tried to bring some of that to my story that, you know, even the bad guys sometimes think that they have no choice or that they're doing something that's for at least the greater good for themselves, and how that leads to additional problems.
Yeah. And I think that makes for much more interesting villains, or, you know, even just a protagonist antagonist that, you know, people generally don't just wake up evil and go out wrecking havoc. There's a whole backstory. There's all these reasons why they're doing the thing we're doing. And oftentimes in real life, and in my own investigations experience, people are rationalizing the things they're doing. And, you know, it's for them a lesser of the evils, and they've, you know, kind of had to make that really tough choice. And it makes for much more interesting writing. And it also very closely mirrors reality.
Right. I agree. Yeah.
Now, I also wanted to get your point of view on point of view. Do you consciously plan to write your books in a particular voice, or do your characters kind of flesh that out for you as they're forming?
The characters definitely do. I do a lot of plotting beforehand. So because I think that with thrillers, you know, you're trying to surprise the reader, and these are smart readers that are looking the whole time for the clues, you know. So in order to really surprise them, you have to kind of do your best to think it out and put a lot more thought than they are, you know, in the reading of it. And so do a lot of plotting. But as far as, you know, how I do point of view, I really try to kind of immerse myself into the character and describe the room the way they would through their eyes, based on their mood at the time and the backstory that I know they have. And so I do a lot of work with that and try to, if there's not one voice, even though this one is close third person, you know, the little transcriber is kind of sitting somewhere between the ear and the brain of the point of view character. Yeah.
Now, someone once told me that the best way to understand something is to teach it. And I also think that applies to writing. For me, writing is such an intrinsic effort that I often write about things that I personally want to explore, better understand. And I wonder how much of that also is part of your writing process as you're ferreting out your plots and your outlines.
Sure. I mean, I think that you have to feel kind of passionate about a subject or interested in order to really immerse yourself in a way that you can make a novel feel real. In fact, not with this book, but with my first book, Dark Turns, I knew that I wanted the action to take place in this competitive dance school, because I thought that I was kind of dealing with these very privileged kids and this one person that was particularly amoral, and I wanted them to be in kind of a state of constant competition. So I thought a dance school would do that, but I hadn't ever taken dance. So I enrolled in ballet for a year and I took adult ballet classes 2 to 3 times a week. And by the way, I've never danced. And I did it so, and a lot of these women, because I'm in my 30s, and at that time I was, I guess like 33,
A lot of these women had been professional dancers, or at least danced all the way through college and were kind of keeping up with it. Mm-hmm. But I was able to interview them, and that was great. And at the end, they put me in the recital, which wow. I thought was pretty, yeah. Mind you, way in the back.
But still there. That's really fantastic.
Yeah, but it was cool. And so I guess with this book, One Little Secret, I wanted to explore kind of the downside of polite society in some ways. Mm-hmm. You know, that yes. I think in suburbia there's a high premium placed on everyone being kind of polite and friendly and mm-hmm. outward appearances. We live in a Facebook world where people post the good stuff. They kind of don't post when, you know, the house is a mess and mm-hmm. the kids are screaming or whatever it is. So, yes. So I wanted to explore, well, what do you do when you have people that kind of have these, as a result, these kind of superficial friendships, and they're put in a situation like at a beach house where, you know, they're drinking a lot and they're in a closed environment, and things start to come out that chip away at kind of these perfect veneers. And so that was the theme that I wanted to explore. And then I guess how I researched it was I did a lot of, I read a lot of books about domestic violence. Also, when I was in high school, mm-hmm. I had volunteered for a long time at a domestic violence shelter. Oh, so wow. That kind of, that informed my writing, that was already there. And so that's how I researched it. But I do think also one thing that was really interesting with this book is when you go to a domestic violence shelter, you're also dealing with women that, you know, they're in a position where they needed a shelter, where they couldn't go to a hotel, or they couldn't, you know, they didn't have family that they could go to. So I don't think that means that it doesn't happen in more affluent communities. I think that it's just kind of the people that need to use the services get counted, and often are also more likely to call the police. So I did a lot of kind of research with books and into domestic violence in kind of more affluent communities and in more affluent marriages to frame the story.
Yeah, and I think, you know, people in that position and that more affluent society are going to be far less likely to report anything like that. You know, I think for a lot of the same reasons you've kind of talked about, what are the neighbors going to think? And, you know, what are the impact going to be on, you know, our standing and our reputation? And it's in my experience, those are some of the more abusive relationships because of that that additional societal leverage. And it's really sad. And hopefully, you know, will eventually be broken down over time. But you know, there's a lot to it, especially in our, like you said, our Facebook world, where we're looking at everyone's highlight reels and trying to make our real life, you know, kind of correlate to that.
Right.
Now, I've also heard somewhere, and it's a major theme of this podcast, but it takes about a decade of consistent blood, sweat, and tears to become an overnight success. And I wonder what your journey was like from inspiration to published writer to best-selling author.
Yeah, well, and I'm still working on being an overnight success. I don't know if I can use success yet, but you know, I was a journalist for years. I started off working for the Record newspaper, which was a daily newspaper in northern New Jersey, mm-hmm. And then I interned at the Boston Globe and kind of whet my appetite for crime writing. I covered an OxyContin theft ring at the time. It was kind of funny because I was in college and, you know, just interning there. And, you know, there were some like drug stores that got robbed. And so they kind of like, you know, put the kid on it because they have more important things to do. And then it turned out that summer, it was just like this group was hitting one every couple of days.
Wow.
And eventually the police caught them. They were like it was interesting. They weren't quite a gang. They were more addicts turned dealers, but also addicts. So, but it was anyway, so that was interesting. And I think I started kind of writing fiction stories on the side. And then I eventually was working at a Business Week magazine covering technology, which I liked, but you know, you had to write in such kind of a tight format because it's a business magazine and they're investors looking for, you know, actionable information. And so sometimes I felt that the actual storytelling of it got lost a bit. And so I was satisfying that urge by, you know, staying up and writing fiction, and nothing really came of it until I had my second child and left journalism and then said, okay, I'm going to really write fiction full time. And about 2 years later, I published my first book.
Who was your first writing mentor, or if you had one, and what was that relationship like?
Well, sure. Well, my first writing mentor was my grandfather. He was a journalist. He had an aviation magazine. And what I got from him was a sense that, you know, you always have to do the research, right? And I bring that even to my fiction. I think that I can imagine things, but in order for it to really feel real, I have to immerse myself first and knowing a lot about it before I can begin extrapolating and making up things that will match reality. And so that's why I find a female detective if I'm writing a female detective, or I, you know, try and read a lot of first person accounts of domestic violence if I'm going to write a story about that. And so that meant a lot to me. And then also in college, I took a lot of journalism classes, even though I was a politics major, because journalism isn't a major at Princeton. And I was lucky enough to have Barton Gellman as one of my professors, who's won the Pulitzer multiple times.
Wow.
And he really kind of talked about how you tell someone's story and the how action reveals character. And I think learning from him was really instrumental.
When did you know that you could write fiction and that someone other than your mother wanted to read what you had to say?
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, it's always a game every book. I'm hoping that someone other than my mother will read what I have to say, or my husband, who I like make read it. But, you know, my poor husband, he's always just reading it to see if, like, he's influenced any of the male characters and if I'm taking out arguments, you know? He's like, what did she kill somebody for now? But you know, I think I just, in some ways, it didn't matter, right? Who read it? It's just, I think if you have these stories to tell, you kind of have to tell them. And I think that you just hope that other people enjoy them and keep reading them. But I don't think I could stop myself from telling stories if I tried.
So, having been in the industry and in the business for several years now, what do you wish you had known about writing and publishing back when you first started submitting queries and trying to get your book published?
Genre. I think that when I wrote my first book, I just wanted to tell like what I thought was a cool story. And it had elements, it was like everything in the kitchen sink, right? It would have been impossible to shelve. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't know about genre. And then my agent, who I think I was lucky that she kind of recognized that I was a good writer if a confused one, and said, you know, there's kind of these rules of books that should be, you know, if you're writing a thriller, you kind of can't veer off into these long passages that would be more suited for, let's say, a women's fiction book. And, mm-hmm. you know, and really told me that I had to kind of study the genre I wanted to write in. And I did. And then, you know, came back with a rewritten version of that first book that ended up being Dark Turns.
Now, I saw that you're on the Thriller Fest schedule later this week, and I think I remember you're part of a discussion panel. Is that right?
I am. It's called, I believe it's about how to make interesting protagonists, but it's something about Superwoman. I mean, they always have these pithy titles, and unfortunately, yes. I don't remember it. But the crux of it is that it's about how to write interesting protagonists.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. It's going to be a really informative week. I've heard lots of fantastic things from from other authors who've, you know, come last year for their first Thriller Fest. And so it's going to be really good. I'm excited. Yeah. Beyond your writing and your family, what are you passionate about? What gets you out of bed in the morning and moving with a purpose?
Geez, well, a few things. One, my kids and my dog, because if I sleep in, I can't. So that'll do it. Also, you know, I guess as a hobby, I love music. I was in a band for a while. So many writers, actually, music mm-hmm. seems to go along with it.
Yes.
So I still play the piano and sing, even though I'm no longer in my 20s, like rocking out in little clubs in New York, but which is fun. I show my kids pictures and I'm like, wasn't mommy cool? And they're like, you're never cool. But, but yeah, that's it.
Now, with writers also being pretty voracious readers, I wonder if you have a favorite fictional detective or investigator you're reading right now.
Oh, favorite fictional. You know, I read a lot of psychological thrillers where there aren't as many detective characters.
Mm-hmm.
So I read Wendy Walker's latest. I thought that was great. I read Riley Sager's book with, you know, about this hotel where there are all these rules and you find out why this woman has to obey all the rules. It's really kind of creepy and definitely a page turner. And I'm currently reading The Mother-in-Law, which is a new author to me. It's funny, I'm highlighting passages and I'm sitting there thinking, am I highlighting those because they remind me of my mother-in-law, or am I highlighting them because they're good writing? I don't know. But
there's got to be some commonality between all mothers-in-law. Yeah.
I think so. Yeah.
Now, I asked this last question of all the authors who come on the show. So I guess keeping kind of that last one in mind, but God forbid it should come to pass, Kate, but if you were to wake up tomorrow and find yourself murdered, what fictional investigator, assassin, or revenge artist would you want working your case?
I think it would have to be Jack Reacher.
That was almost like you had that queued up. That was very quick.
Well, I just mean you know he's gonna win, and then Tom Cruise is gonna play him in the movie, so that way I can, you know, my death will live on.
Yes, immortalized forever. Where can readers connect with you, find your works, maybe get updates or a newsletter on your releases?
Oh, sure. Well, my Facebook page, I update pretty regularly. That's just Kate Holohan at Facebook. And then on my webpage, that's www.katehollihan.com. That's and Kate spelled with a C because it's short for Catherine.
Well, I greatly appreciate you making time to join us today and share your expertise. It's been great having you on.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. Great conversation.
You've been listening to Writers on the Beat, where crime writers meet crime fighters, a copyrighted broadcast of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. I'm your host, Gavin Reese, and this episode's guest has been best-selling author Kate Holohan. Until next time, take care of yourselves and each other. Be safe out there.